I'm Aria Schwartz, and welcome to the Windsider Show, where it's all about the W. To say the W was action-packed this weekend would be a major understatement. Just a crazy, crazy weekend full of stuff to talk about. I'm joined by Windsider writer and longtime WNBA reporter Mitchell Hansen this episode. So it's time to dive right in. Show, please consider joining our Patreon community, patreon.com/windsider. That's patreon.com/windsider. For less than a cup of coffee a month, you can directly show support for the hard work we all do covering the W. And don't forget our amazing staff's written content over at windsider.com. That's windsider.com. And make sure you are joining us for the newest, most fun way to enjoy WNBA games. We're over on Playback. We have these fun watch parties. Use the link playback.tv/windsider. That's playback.tv/windsider. We're back to the Windsider Show. I'm excited. Mitchell, we'll get to the links in a moment. Mitchell's filling in for Rachel, who is currently pissing off the whole Windsider staff while she travels through Barcelona on her way to Turkey for a FIBA like U19, U17 tournament in Turkey. So very, very jealous of her. But enough about Rachel. How are you, Mitchell?
I'm great. How are you doing? It was fun on Playback yesterday. We were watching the Liberty and Aces blowout, and then we kind of jumped around. But it's always, like you mentioned, it's fun being on Playback. So it was a good afternoon.
It was a nice afternoon. Who would have thought that was the game that was going to be the biggest blowout of yesterday? I'll tell you, most people did not. Yeah. Before we get into that, we got to talk about the attention grabbing, the tussles of yesterday. I mean, okay, so let's start it off with, and I don't know how, I feel like as we, maybe it was our fault, as Amani, myself, and you, as we switched around the games yesterday, it was very clear that whenever we switched to a game, something crazy was about to happen. We switch to the game and Marina hits a crazy shot and gives the "you're too small" to Odyssey
Sims. Reaction to that was phenomenal, by the way.
She was just like, come on, are you serious right now? Like, get over yourself. Like, what's going on? Like, chill out, right? And then a few moments later, Dana Evans and Odyssey Sims get into it, into a Dana Evans stare down. I honestly would have been hilarious if Dana Evans did the "you're too small" to Odyssey Sims, because they're two of the smallest players in the league. And later in the game, Arike gets ejected for touching the ref. So just all hell breaking loose in the Chicago-Dallas Wings game. Then you talk about the Sparks and Mystics. I mean, the Sparks, a team that I've had multiple reporters say to me, like, wow, they're so professional and well kept together. And I think a lot of people would say that about the Mystics also. But then you just have Laysha Clarendon cutting to the basket. And I get the idea behind it from Brittany Sykes to foul so that you can't get the shot off. Concerning when you bear hug a player who's running full speed, injuries happen that way. And you see Lay trying to kind of get out of it. They fall to the ground. There's a point where after they fall to the ground, Sykes gets up, kind of gives a shove to Laysha, and then looks down, gives the flex, and was pulled off. She'll be removed from the game on that one. And I'm trying to think, like, the Dream Fever game was maybe the most normal, calm game of yesterday. Maybe we missed it. Didn't see much craziness happen in that one.
Well, the downside of it was, and we talked about this at Playback, that they all happened at the same time, which was tough, which I am not a fan of. I get why they do it. I get it's a Sunday afternoon. You want to, you know, it's like you kind of mentioned, you know, give everybody kind of the same advantage / disadvantage, whatever. But it, as a fan, it's hard to just watch four games at once. And I wish even just an hour separator would definitely be helpful, because you can catch the end of each game.
Right, like, stack them, like, and I want full clarity on this. I was joking. sometimes the jokes don't land. Yeah.
I don't disagree with it.
I just think it's ridiculous. Like, yeah. Let's stagger them out. Obviously, my biggest disappointment of yesterday was that the Beyonce concert got like rain delayed for many, many hours. So I did not end up going.
What happened with that, by the way?
I never knew this, but if you like buy tickets on Ticketmaster, like any of the ticket websites, late, like an hour before the show, they're insanely cheap. And so it got to a point where like my wife went 2 days ago and got really, really cheap tickets, good seats. And, you know, I won't get into all the details, but basically Morris, like, you should go. You're a Beyonce fan. Like, you would enjoy this. Why don't we go together, get a babysitter? So we're looking at tickets and we're like, okay. And then all of a sudden just a crazy storm happens. And for those who don't know, basically they had a shelter in place. So if you had gone through security, they like had you stuffed in the hallways at the arena, the stadium. And then there was a heat advisory. So people were being rushed to the hospital because there wasn't enough. It was a bunch of people sardine packed into an arena, an outdoor arena in the inside. It was just bad. And they didn't start the show for like, it was supposed to start at 8, but normally I think it starts at 9. I don't think, I remember looking at like 11 something and it hadn't even started yet. So for my sanity, I'm happy I didn't go. But yeah, just an overall a mess. Another mess was the Aces Liberty game where,
yes,
I mean, it was raining threes from Sabrina. Sabrina just goes off, dominates the Liberty. And honestly, like, if I'm being 100% real, I noticed yesterday and even some today, there was more talk. And I'm curious your take on this. There was more talk about the post-game press conference questions towards Asia than there was about the fact that Liberty just dominated the Aces. And I get, like, you were around the Lynx during the Dynasty era. You saw them, you know, sometimes just, well, I don't know if they ever lost by almost 40. But you've seen, like, is it almost a mindset of, like, oh, it doesn't matter, right? Like, okay, that's that one game. It's such an off one. Like, what was your thought from a person who's been close to Dynasties?
When talking about, like, looking back on the Lynx, I do think it was a lot of that same mindset. It was, okay, like, this is just one game. We've lost two games, for the Aces. They've lost two games. This is their third loss of the season. Like, they know they're kind of on, you know, cruise control until the postseason starts. That was kind of the mentality with the Lynx, too. It gets to a certain point of the year, maybe kind of right now in the year, where they just kind of, all right, they're going through the motions. Let's get ready for the postseason and then make a run towards the title. And I think that that's kind of what, you know, we saw with Asia's comment and just kind of where they're at right now. Like, they're not going to look too much into this. They're not going to, you know, look back at the end of the year or, you know, even the next game and be like, wow, we really got to bounce back. Like, sure, they're probably going to bounce back. I mean, they're Las Vegas, they're the best team in the league, but I don't really look too much into it. I mean, it was more to me a matter of, you know, a player got hot. If a player gets hot, there's nothing you can do about that. Like, you can throw anything at them defensively, and odds are it's probably still not gonna do it a ton, especially the kind of shots that Sabrina was throwing up and hitting. But it's just one of those games. You turn the page and you just keep moving and. That's all I take away from it. I don't really look into it too much more than that. What do you think?
I mean, I saw on it, if I'm being the classic me, you know, doubter, wet towel, whatever you want to call it, hater, whatever. Like, if I'm gonna look at this game and I'm gonna go, okay, so here's the thing. Basically, New York had one player go off. JJ was much more physical in the paint. That was like the real question. I think what we've seen from JJ of recent is she's finally trying to prove the narrative that's out there, which I think is a legit one because of what we've seen this season, that she doesn't want to bang down low in the paint. We've seen her kind of attack that thing a little bit. But yeah, like you said, Sabrina went off. Like, you're not going to do much about that. What I would say is the biggest thing that I would take away from that game was that New York has found a way to play defense that, like, Panay Gelaney covering Chelsea Gray, using that size against her, trying to find ways to protect Sloot and Sabrina, who are not elite defenders, who are middle of the pack defenders at best. So I think what I saw was New York finding ways to play against the top team, learning lessons and growing from them. That's a positive. Do I look at it and I go, oh my God, their offense is so good. No way Vegas can handle that. No, because at the end of the day, I very much just kind of view it as, you know, nobody on Vegas got going. Sabrina went off. If Sabrina doesn't go off, if she misses a couple of those shots, we're talking, I know it was almost a 40-point game, but we're talking about a very, very different game. And to the point we both made is like Vegas kind of like at a certain point, okay, it's a 20-point game. Let's make a push. Not happening. Cool. Who cares? We've already clinched the playoff spot. Mm-hmm. It's also like a very different season and situation for the two teams where New York still needs to prove themselves. I don't like, if you look from a wide perspective, do you look at this and do you feel more confident in New York's championship aspirations? Or like, how does this impact your feelings on the outcome of the end of the season?
I think if Las Vegas would have had a game like they did the first game, you know, at the end of June, it would further prove, well, kind of solidify to me that Vegas is going to run away with it. Now, the fact that New York did win, I still think, you know, Vegas is the far superior team. Well, maybe not far superior, but they're the superior team. But it makes things more interesting. I mean, it's interesting, more interesting than what we saw at the end of June when Las Vegas won by 17 points and just kind of took, you know, New York out of it for the whole time. That's what we saw New York do now this time around. So it makes it at least makes things a little bit more interesting. And the other thing is too, like, obviously this New York team is much different than what we saw at the end of June. They're a lot better than what they were at the end of June, which is expected. So you expected some sort of, you know, bounce back or, you know, improvement at least from what we saw the first game. I don't know if anybody expected the type of game we saw on Sunday than, you know, than what took place. But, you know, New York can still, they can match up with Vegas, you know, a decent amount. And like you said, when they can get going and you can take Asia Wilson out of the game like we saw, you know, that it definitely gives them a chance. But I mean, in the end, I don't think that it really changes my viewpoint on what will eventually take place. I think that, you know, Vegas will maybe drop one game in the finals and then they're going to win the rest. So regardless of who it is, I just think they're just way too talented and too deep to match up against.
And they have the depth too. And like, okay, the questions of Candace Parker's health, I get it. No, like, but It'll be very interesting to kind of see where the teams go. And especially considering the fact that, what, they play three more times in the next couple weeks. I think we might almost be sick of the Liberty Aces in the next couple weeks. Who knows? But, well, don't worry. I'm sure we'll enjoy it. It'll be some good basketball.
If nothing else, it's a fun, you know, rivalry that's building. I mean, it's a fun matchup that, it's kind of similar to the Sparks Lynx that we saw during the Lynx dynasty era.
Or it's just a fun matchup. You know, the Mystics Storm or the Sun fill in random other team.
Right.
There's been some amazing short term rivalries of top powerhouse teams in the league. And I think it's been amazing. But I agree. I don't think that, like, I come out of this game and I'm like, oh man, New York is so, like, I would almost argue that honestly, my perception of the league changed in no way after that game.
Right.
Does it give me a little bit more confidence that New York, like, because I said before the game, I think Vegas was going to blow them out. And I think if we do see a matchup in the finals, if I'm being completely blunt, I think Asia Wilson, the Aces, sweep New York. Obviously, like, you could have a crazy game like yesterday, but whatever. It's just my thoughts. I wasn't, because I think when you get so blown away by a team at a certain point, like I said earlier, you just kind of call it a quits. Because, mm-hmm. like, what's the point? Are you trying to hurt the player? Like, what are you going to do when there's a minute left in the third and you're down 40? Like,
yeah. But we even saw that, like, basically before even the midway point in the third quarter, it was like, you know, Becky pulled the starters and it was just you know, throw in the towel. Like it ended up being more of a blowout than maybe what it could have been or what it maybe, you know, looked like throughout the first 2.5 quarters or whatever. But I mean, I don't know. I look at it like, are you going to have the type of shooting performance that, like, can you rely on that type of shooting performance, you know, a couple times in a series? I don't think you can. I mean, if you can, you deserve it. I mean, that's...
Well, the pushback on two front is, you can say the same thing from Vegas. Are you going to get that same shooting performance? No, because there's no way none of them go off. On the other hand, are you going to get that same shooting performance from Stewie and some of the other players? No. So I think it's like a very much catch 22. I guess I will say this, through talking it out, the one thing that I was impressed with and changes my perception of New York a little bit is when we saw New York go off, was it against Indiana? I forget who it was against. Yeah, it was Indiana when they had that historic first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, they weren't that good second, third, fourth.
Right.
Like, and the third, fourth was really not good. They just rode the wave of that early first quarter. And so to see them pile together a big win, but it was a complete win, even if the other team's phoning it in at the end, I think that that is an indicator for me of positive things. So now let's talk about the wings. We see them slide twice to the sky. Before that, like, they're 4-4 in their last 8 games in the last month. They beat New York. Just over a month ago, they beat Vegas. Then they lose to Vegas. They've lost to Chicago twice. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Are you starting to get concerned of the fourth best team in the league? Would you, you know, what are your thoughts on the Wings of today?
They still have, I mean, I really do like them as a team. I like what, you know, when they're all on, they're extremely fun to watch, just as a fan's perspective. I can't buy them as a serious, you know, threat yet, just with that inconsistencies that we kind of talked about. They're still trying to, it almost seems like they're still trying to figure things out on who maybe is like their go-to option. Is it going to be, Rike? Is it going to be, you know, Satu? Is it like, who are they going to go to? And it's almost like they just go to the hot hand, which sometimes that works really well. But in those crunch time moments, in those big games, when you need somebody to step up, it's almost like they don't know who to go to yet. So they still have some stuff to figure out, I think. But I mean, they're a team that when they get rolling, they're dangerous and they're fun to watch, and they can go up against any offense in the league. You know, we've had this conversation a couple times on Playback and just, you know, in our Slack, that, you know, we don't, you know, we kind of question, like, who, you know, we, like I just talked about, who is that number one option? Who, like, it seems like something's missing yet. It just seems like there's something that needs to be added if they want to make that next step. And I think that that's something they still need to figure out. And it's a good problem to have. I mean, trying to figure out how to take that next step is a good, very good problem to have. And I think they're just kind of in that middle ground right now, which they're on the, you know, the uptick, but they're, I don't know if they're serious contenders just yet.
Well, and I'll say this, I don't think I've heard anyone call them serious contenders.
Well, right. Yet. No, exactly.
That's the funny part for me, is like, they're not.
Right.
Nobody thought they were. There's a reason why, if you're like me and you put $10 down a month ago on them, that you would win $1,000.
Yeah.
If you picked for any team other than New York or Vegas, it was like $10 to win 65. So like, it's just one of those situations where I think if everything clicks right, this team can be really scary and beat any team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fun, interesting thing and almost desperate thing about us as not being part of a team is that Dallas is the only one we can say that about. Everyone, I got some comments from the last episode about my Dream hate. I'm not hating on the Dream. I just don't think Ryan Howard's old enough yet. I don't think she's grown enough in her game. I don't think that roster is at the same level that Dallas is. We've seen that growth. We see where they are. We know Dallas has the superstar power, and those superstars are far enough along in their career that they can make noise that I don't think Atlanta can make. So sorry, Atlanta Dream fans who hate my constant bickering.
There's a much different thing, or there's a big separator between being a good regular season team, being a good first half, or maybe even like three-fourths regular season team compared to that final fourth or and in the playoffs. That's completely different. And that's where you see a lot of those younger teams kind of taper off and kind of fizzle out towards the end or even in the playoffs because they're inexperienced. I mean, that's part of, like, to your point, that's part of growing, that's part of taking that next step is learning from those times, learning from those, experiences. And I'm not saying Dallas has experienced all of that yet. I mean, Natasha Howard probably has more than the other two bit on their big three, but I do agree with back to Atlanta that, you know, I don't think that they're really going to do much, you know, maybe towards the end of the season in the playoffs. They're a great team. I mean, they're where they're at in the standings for a reason. That's not a mistake, but I think that Dallas could, I shouldn't have said that they're, you know, throughout the like serious contender part, but I think they could play spoiler. They could upset somebody and, you know, kind of clear a path for somebody else or whatever that may be. But I think that's kind of the difference between Dallas and Atlanta is just kind of that, like you said, just they're just a little bit more battle tested than maybe what Atlanta is right now.
One of the things I really, really enjoy doing is looking at the last 10 game record. Dallas, while they're on a 2-game losing skid, they're 6-4 now. So they mm-hmm. they were 6-2 over the last 8 games until. So I'm much less concerned about them. Atlanta, you're talking about 5-5. The other thing I'll say is, like, for Atlanta to be sitting at number 5, we've had to watch Washington just completely fall from grace.
Yeah.
And Minnesota, like, we're talking about a Washington team without 3 starters. By far their best, I'll say it, their 3 best players are missing. Just a 3-7 skid over the last 10 games. And you can see that frustration boiling over in the likes of those fights, the scuffles, the whatevers you want to call them. I think that's just frustration boiling over from a season where everyone expected Washington to play spoiler. You're looking at that first dominant win over the Liberty. And since then, it's just been, you know, even with their best players, just underwhelming. And so for Atlanta, they're playing solid, like you're saying. We're seeing nice growth from this team. But also, like, let's be realistic. They don't want to be that good. This isn't a team that was built to be playing playoff spoiler. This isn't a team that was built to be contender. This is a team built to continuously grow and build around this core that they have. You know, is Cheyenne Parker going to stay around? Is she part of that core? Or is it just Alicia Gray and Ryan Howard? It'll be really interesting. Like, we're going on this. Because we got you, I got to drop a fun stat that I need your help to confirm. Minnesota Lynx, what's going on with them? Well, I'll tell you what's going on with them. When Dorca Juhas starts, they're 13-9. When she doesn't start, they're 0-6. So I think it's pretty clear. I'm no genius here. The math is easy and obvious to me, but in a general sense, like, we've seen Minnesota kind of separate themselves against what my preseason prediction was, but kind of separate themselves to a point where it will be almost shocking to see them in the lottery come the end of the season. What's going on with your Lynx?
I mean, they're surprised. You know, the last, you could say 4 games now, with the exception of they kind of took a, I don't want to say a step back against New York because it's New York in their previous game, but they had a really nice stretch, and that was without Nafisa Collier too. I mean, they played, you know, 3 games against, or notably, well, you could say 4 games if you want to wrap in Washington into that as well. But they're, you know, like you just mentioned, they're without their 3 best players. So you kind of got to take that with a grain of salt. But their next 3 games after that with, they had New York and then Connecticut back-to-back in Connecticut. You know, they won 2 out of those 3 games. If you'd have told me that they would have won 2 out of the 3 games, I would have, you know, I wouldn't have believed you without Nafisa Collier too. I mean, I thought they were going to lose all 3. Potentially have a chance in one of the Connecticut games, but the short answer for what's been going well. I mean, you mentioned Dorca has been playing phenomenal. She's been everything that Minnesota could have hoped for and more. I know you guys have talked about it on this podcast. Rachel's talked about it a lot. I agree that I think she's the steal of the draft. I I did not expect her to drop to 16. I thought she'd get taken to 12, but I thought she even could have gone higher than that. But I mean, the fact that Minnesota got her at 16 is great to pair with Diamond Miller. Those two have been outstanding as rookies. They've, you know, they've been completely, you know, steady with the exception of injuries, maybe. They've been steady, consistent. They have really good heads on their shoulders. But the other aspect too is Kayla McBride. She has been doing everything for this team. You know, especially when Fee was out, she was, you know, she was that step-in leader. I'm sure Fee was with the team, but K-Mac was on the court at that time. She does a little bit of everything. She, you know, when her shot's not falling, she's impacting the game elsewhere. She's improving defensively. You know, she's, I think, on a career pace for steals, which is a testament to her focus on defense and improving in that area. But, you know, obviously her offensive game speaks for itself when she's rolling. But her leadership this year, I think, has taken another step that I don't think you can let her go this offseason. I think you got to bring her back in some capacity. I don't know if she's okay with potentially moving to a bench role if the team brings in somebody else, but we can deal with that when they get there. But yeah, I mean, this team at this point in the, you know, in the season, you know, they're sitting in the 7 seed, 13-15 after the 0-6 start. I mean, I don't think anybody expected this. And I, like you said, I would be surprised if they drop out of the playoff picture. I think they're a playoff team right now. And I did not believe that at the beginning of the year.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you, my man. No, I mean, like, we look at this team and a lot of people are going, what are you talking about, RA? You know, Minnesota is 13-15. Chicago is 12-15. LA is 10-18. Those three teams realistically are going to be fighting for that last lottery spot now, mm-hmm. or you can look at it and say two of those teams are going to be lucky enough to make playoffs. Depends how you're looking at it. I know there's a fan queue we're about to get to about that in a moment, but it's funny because I agree. I mean, you just sit there and heck, they're basically, if they didn't lose that last one, you'd be talking about a team that's ahead of Washington, right? They're half a game behind Washington for the 6th seed. I mean, they're right in that mix. It's, I don't know what you can say other than a classic Cheryl Reeves season of just a horrible start and somehow has pulled it together and is making growth throughout the season. They're growing.
And we've talked about it too. Just the job that she's done with this team, I think goes underrated. I mean, yep. A lot of people just view the record. They view, you know, whatever. They don't look at what goes into all of this. Her development of the players and the fit of all of these players that she consistently does. And a lot of times she does it on the fly. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you mentioned it, the last couple of years, they've started 0-4 the last, 3 years, this year included. And they've
even more years. I think it's like 4 or 5 years.
Could
now.
Be. Yeah. I mean, it's just been every year. It's been a slow start where they, you know, they get off, you know, 4, 5, 6 games where they lose those first games and then they bounce back and they kind of, they're that team that surprises everybody. But that's a testament to, you know, the system that's in place, molding your system around the pieces that you have and not just sticking to your guns and saying, this is a system we're going to run regardless of who's in our schemes and in our system. But, you know, this year you look at, how did she change things? Well, first of all, new players that came onto the team. You're inserting two rookies into the starting lineup. That's never, ever been done with the Cheryl Reeve team, first of all. But, well, with the exception of Maya Moore, but, I mean, Orphy. And, but, I mean, the other thing is, too, like, they completely changed their offensive scheme this year to match, you know, match what Fee does well. And they're catering the team or surrounding the team around the strengths of Nafisa Collier. And, you know, just that consistent, you know, adjustment and kind of, like I said, doing it on the fly. It's, I mean, there's a reason she's, you know, one of the all-time greatest coaches in this game. And she's, to me, she's proving that again this year. And she's doing it without being the Cheryl Reeve we all know and enjoy of, you know, just listening to with, you know, kind of being that, you know, blunt kind of, I don't know, you could say like kind of harping on her team. This year, she's been really more relaxed than I think I've ever seen. And it's, it's refreshing and it's cool. I mean, it's great to see. I mean, it's fun to watch, and it's impressive to see the job that she's done too, with not only adding the players. I know she's not the GM, but she has a large role in all of that. But her and Claire do a good job of leading that team and continuing to find kind of hidden pieces and pieces that fit this team well.
Well, and that's, I think, is something that, you know, I'll own up to. I think the biggest knock I've had for Reeve has been her player development, because we haven't seen much of it. My biggest knock for Reeve has been playing more of an old school basketball mentality versus trying to shift and play. And I think this year she's answered those questions. She's doing it very differently, and she looks reinvigorated. And like you said, it's nice to see her coaching a different style than we've gotten used to. So real quick, no, we're running low on time. Got a few fan questions. This one is from Quinn, who's been joining us on the playbacks. So everyone should join. He shot us a DM on Instagram. So feel free to pass the questions along however you like. They say, I've been impressed with Atlanta's rise, although I've taken a gander, love the use of gander, at their cap space. They have the second highest amount of cap space at the moment and plenty of expiring contracts. Why doesn't a team like Atlanta take advantage of this and trade some of these pricier contracts for draft compensation so they can challenge the shaky Liberty? Now, I think shaky Liberty might be pre-sent. This was sent a few days ago, so that makes sense. No, I think so. First of all, trade deadline is today. I don't think we'll see much. Maybe we'll see some cuts, maybe some divorces and some re-signings, things like that. But I don't think we're going to see much. Nothing earth-shattering, but hey, I've been wrong before. I think the reason you're not going to see it is what we touched on earlier, not to be short, but just that Atlanta doesn't want to do that good yet. The reason you have those high contracts for expiring vets who aren't the key players is because they have that cap space. And they're one of the few teams in the league that were able to do that. They have a good amount of draft picks coming soon. Don't get rid of those draft picks. You have a lot of amazing players coming through the draft in the next 2 years. So hold on to those. And then you're adding those players onto a team that has your core already established, which I think is a smarter move as opposed to trying to, you know, not cheat the line, but like skip the line a year, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Trust the process in Atlanta. I like the direction it's going. We got Corbett, AKA the Eliope, because it's just a great graphic. I don't know if we can properly prepare a discussion, but I think at this point we need to talk about the perception of tanking in the W. I would love more on what Corbett means from the perception of it. I think just realistically, and I've said this before, and again, Mitch will hop in at any point, like players don't tank. GMs tank. Coaches, it's hard to tank. Players don't tank because the W is 100 and, you know, they say 144. It's less than that. It's like 139 players in the league. Like, you can't tank as a player because having a couple of bad games can lose you your career. You can't tank as a coach because there's 12 spots. And if you're not performing, you will lose your spot and be done unless you're a Kurt Miller, unless you're a Cheryl Reeve, or unless the ownership has made it clear we understand we're not going to do good and we need to do good later on. I think GMs tank, and the way GMs tank is by putting together flawed rosters that, if done correctly, build around a key piece like a Nafisa, right? But there's some other obvious holes that are missing, and you don't worry about that so much. You don't sink money into solving that issue. You focus on tanking or getting a better draft pick and show, like, it's what Seattle's doing. It's what LA is doing to some degree. It's what Chicago can't do because they don't have draft picks. What Minnesota should be doing, what Indiana's kind of doing, which is realistically, you look around the league, you go, we're not winning a championship this year, right? Like, there's four teams in this league, maybe five, that can win the championship this year. Let's be realistic. So every other team should be trying to be better next year, thinking in advance, thinking smart. And I will also say that there is the element of like, the fan base. Will the fan base stay with you? Because it can be really hard for those 2 years that your team isn't doing good. but fan bases will show up when you get Caitlin Clark, when you get Paige, when you get Maya Moore, when mm-hmm. you get, you know, Brittany Griner. Like, do I think it's a good thing that half the league is tanking? No. I don't think half the league is physically actually tanking. Yeah, did that make any sense, Mitchell?
I agree with you that, you know, in any league, but maybe specifically the WNBA, it's hard to tank. I mean, it is hard to tank just for the aspect of you're dealing with people's livelihoods like that. Like, to your point, like, players are not going to tank because they could be out of the league in 2 days, and, you know, next year maybe never return because there's so limited spots or so few spots in the WNBA. Same thing for coaches. I agree that if you're tanking, it starts above that. I mean, it starts at the GM, maybe the owner, but then at that point you have the 2 year total that comes into effect. And you're, like you said, you're messing with the fan base. You know, how is that going to impact your future? Just with the revenue that your team is going to be bringing in. I mean, you know, that's from a GM's perspective. That's from a owner's perspective. When you think about tanking like that, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that, and you're kind of pushing all of your chips in when you do something like that. And that's why I just really don't think that, you know, teams actively try to tank. I don't know. I mean, and there's the other thing of it is too, like, let's say you wanted to tank this year and you're in a position to get a top pick. Are you going to get Caitlin Clark or Paige Bueckers? That's not a guarantee.
So they might delay one more year.
Right. So are you going to do that again next year and go further into the hole on revenue and, you know, everything?
I'll say this. I agree with everything you're saying. The one pushback that I'll have is, look at Seattle. Here's what I'll say. There's tanking, and then there's, to quote the great Buzz Lightyear, there's falling with style. Or I guess it was a Woody line, not a Buzz Lightyear line. Like, Seattle, I think, is very much doing it perfectly in the sense of you still have reason to go to the game. You still have the excitement of Jewel Lloyd's doing historic things. Jewel Lloyd is being next level and is fun and entertaining to watch. So giving reasons for the fans to come to the game, but at the same point, like, you gotta lose. Because otherwise, what are you doing? Everything you say. One last question, and then I'll let you get out of here, Mitchell. Christian on Twitter, who determines what a good question or not in pressers? I would say there's three people who decide: media, fans, and the player. And very often the three do not see eye to eye. Because no, just think about it. Like, look, I didn't hear the question. Like, everyone's talking about the Asia Wilson question. Should there be a question after a person in the MVP race who's on the top team loses by almost 40, shoots 2 for 14. Should you ask a question about, you know, you struggled tonight, what went into that, and so on? Or how are you going to grow from this game when you had just an abysmal bad night? Yeah, I think it's a total fair question. Like, this is pro sports. You should be asking them about that. Are there bad ways to ask a good question? Yes, very, very much so. And a lot of it goes into, one, fan bases are going to be uber defensive for their favorite players and teams. So they might say it's a bad question when it wasn't a bad question or whatever. Players are salty when they lose and often don't want to talk to media when you lose, because who wants to answer a question about why you just lost or why you shot 2 for 14? So I don't know. You of recent are in much more pressers than I. So talk about that. And then he had a second question that we'll get to in one moment.
I do agree with you that there's an etiquette or kind of a way of, I mean, it's just like any conversation you have with anybody. There's a way of asking a question and communicating that question. If I came up to you and was like, you know, let's say you're a coach and I said, you lost tonight, why? You know, that coach is going to be like, whoa, like what? Like, why'd you ask that? Now, if I asked it, you know, you guys, you know, struggled from the field, what went into that? Do you think that fed into, you know, putting together, you know, your season low in points and ultimately you came up short in that regard or whatever? That's maybe a little bit of a better question, because you're not just like those people that are getting asked that question, they feel like you're just going at them. You're attacking them. And not like you said, I don't disagree with the question. I think it should have been asked of, you know, what fed into the struggles maybe. Now the question of, you know, what do you think about your worst performance of the year? Like, what do you expect her to say? Like, she, right. You know, she's not going to respond nice to that. Like, you know,
no one's going to.
No. And it's just being respectful and asking in a respectful way is goes a long way. And yeah, I do agree that there is a very right and a very wrong way to asking questions. And I just think that it could have been handled better in this example.
I'll also say this, something that I noticed over my years of going to post game pressers is, fine, I'll call out W Media. Why not? A lot of W Media don't show up for the losing team's presser. A lot of the media members, I'm not saying names, cause this isn't like a names thing. Like just I'll go like, you'll notice a lot of people just don't show up because they don't want to ask those questions. It's uncomfortable. You want to be more friendly with the players and things like that. But like that's part of the job. And I think, you know, no one person decides if it's a good question or a bad question. But at the end of the day, I think questions should always be worded in a respectful, thought out manner. Mm-hmm. And look, sometimes you're going to spend a lot of time thinking of the question, trying to make it come in a positive, in, you know, in a respectful manner. And the player won't take it that way, or, you know, whatever it is, it's not received in that way. And you can grow from that too. But mm-hmm. I think going into it with the loving heart of, I'm trying to ask a legitimate question here in a respectful manner. Like if you missed the game winning shot because you decided to pump fake and take a shot from a different location, it's a fair question to say like, hey, you missed the game winning shot and, you know, blah, blah, blah. You passed up a shot at your hot spot to go to a spot where you shoot a lower percentage. Did you think about that? Or like, why, you know, like right. There's legitimate questions and then there's illegitimate mm-hmm. questions.
And the thing is like with the, you know, the losing locker room or the losing press conferences that you mentioned. Okay. So obviously players and coaches don't want to talk about a loss. The media does not want to write about a loss either. I would much rather write about a win than a loss.
Mm-hmm.
But both parties have a job to do. And that's, you know, whether fans, you know, think that way or not, you know, the media is not out to get players and coaches, and coaches are, you know, it's not just a constant battle, but that is part of both parties' jobs. Like players and the coaches have a job to be in the winning press conferences and the losing press conferences. That is part of their contract. That's part of their job. And just as much as, you know, the media has a job to do to cover on both sides of things. So I mean, you gotta take the good and the bad. But it is about, yeah, being respectful throughout the process. And these people, these athletes, these coaches, they are people. And I think people need to remember that first and foremost.
Hundo P. And last question from Christian. With four of Connecticut's seven losses coming against the Aces and Liberty, what's the realistic expectations for them in the playoffs if they stay in third place? Well, I think the interesting aspect, and we can dive into like seeding and all that, but I think that's a whole episode on its own. We'll get a little closer to the playoffs before we do that. I think it's a legitimate question. I do also think that I'm a little bit higher on Connecticut than maybe some other people. We've seen them grow throughout the season. If I'm being 100% real, I think Connecticut's issues, like Connecticut's not winning a championship this year. And that's just because the issues they've had forever continue today. While they made some positive moves, I think they're still a little bit away from it, as it were. So I think it's a legitimate concern. That said, as we said, if either this episode or on different ones, whatever, like it's really, really hard to sweep a team in four games. It's mm-hmm. really hard to just beat them, you know, just beat them, beat them, beat them. So I would like to think that like maybe that's a positive if you're a Connecticut fan, that they've already lost to these teams so many times, so you've learned from that. I don't know. Are you think Is that what concerns you, or are there issues in Connecticut's game that concern you? I guess is.
This is kind of off the beaten path here, but first of all, I wish Bree Jones was healthy, and yeah, I would love this team like this. Well, I do like this team a lot, but if she was healthy, they would be, to me, probably almost. I mean, them in New York would be, I think, 2A and 2B, but without her, obviously, I don't mind this team. I kind of view them as, you know, we talked about spoiler before, a team that could play spoiler. Connecticut's definitely a team that could do that. I think that they can not only play spoiler, but they could maybe make a little bit of a run. I don't think, like you said, that they're, you know, I don't think they're going to win it this year. But could they maybe make the finals? Yeah, I think they could. I like what they do defensively. They force teams into making a lot of mistakes, which is something they've done, you know, throughout the last few years, but especially this year, or again this year. But then they do have, I mean, they can match up well against other teams. They have, you know, Alyssa Thomas, DeJuana Bonner inside, and they can hurt you from outside too. So they do a lot of good things. They are a very interesting team. They had Bree Jones in there. I think that, you know, it would be even better. I'm bummed that she's out. I know a lot of other people are as well, but they're a team that I think, you know, could make a little bit of a run. And the thing is, this year again, they play into that disrespect, kind of mantra or narrative. So
they can never win, because that, like, what happens if they win it? Then there goes their whole mantra. Right. I just think my thing is, their Achilles heel is scoring.
Yes,
is like they have amazing defense. They can grind you out. They play an ideal style of basketball for the playoffs, if we're being real, but like, none of their scorers are consistent enough for me. It's somebody's stepping up for them that night, and that's great, but we're not talking about it in the same way that Vegas knows Kelsey Plum's going to put up 15 plus, that Jackie's 15 plus, Asia's going to put, you know, whatever number she's putting up, cool, but she's also going to add in 15 rebounds. You know, so like, having that confidence and just that consistency on a scoring front, that's my concern for Connecticut.
Yeah. It always seems like it's either, you know, DeJuana Bonner's going off or Alyssa Thomas is going off. It's never really a mix of both. You know, that game that Alyssa Thomas, I think it was against the Lynx. Yeah, it was against the Lynx when she had her 2020 triple double.
Yeah.
That was that was basically the only game that, you know, they really kind of both stepped up and played well together at the same game. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's normally one or the other. And it's just about finding that consistency and having a balance. And that's somewhere kind of where they struggle. It's not always, you know, a spread out thing. It's all or nothing with one player, it seems like, more often than not.
One pick 'em for this one as we close out our episode. We got 5 games tomorrow, but we're going to ignore all of them. Except, no, we'll do 2 games. Lynx, Sky. Do Sky go on a 3-game win streak, or do Lynx go and extend their loot? Or I guess not. Who do you have winning?
I'm going to go with the Lynx. I'm not to play into the bias a little bit, but I think they're going to bounce back. I do think that, you know, Fee will have, you know, another few days under her belt to kind of get back to full strength. I think she'll be, you know, she'll be back to her normal self. And you know, if Dorky Uhas returns to the lineup, that means they're going to win. So I have to assume that.
There you go.
I think they're going to bounce back. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going Sky on this one, just because I don't like to agree with you. The Lynx. I think the Lynx are oddly a more consistent team. Like, we know who the Lynx are. The Sky are that team that maybe more than any team in this league are just like the Sky are the type of team that'll be the Lynx. A team with shooters who just light it up from three, if the Sky are hitting their shots, that is. And the only other game that is worth noting, Aces, Wings. You know who I'm going with on this one. I assume you're going Aces. I'm going Wings. Wings need to bounce back. Wings. Although Rike might not be playing because of her ejection, so that might be a huge issue, but why not? Let him fly.
I do think that game's going to be close. I don't think it's going to be you know, a blow up by any means.
40-point game.
And now I say that and it'll be a 40-point game. But I mean, like, the, for instance, like, to compare it, like, Vegas was 4.5-point favorites over the Liberty. I would say that that's probably a pretty fair line for the Dallas game. I think it might be around that, you know, 5-point mark, or maybe, you know, five. I think Dallas at some point might be, you know, it'll be kind of a back and forth game, and then maybe Vegas pulls away at the end. But I think it'll be a good game for sure.
Well, as I like to do to end every episode, Mitchell, who's your GOAT?
I don't know. Aryeh.